and I will never be able to take seriously the cardboard box.
Oh,
as a
no.
hiding
it's
place.
My
iconic.
Favorite.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
the it's worst thing.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
It's me, Nolan.
And this is episode 192, and it is a Patreon pool episode.
Sadly to say, the last of our summer pool party, where we've been doing Patreon pools pretty much every other week.
Kind of the coolest thing that we've done in a while.
Ever.
Where we've allowed, almost literally every other week of the summer for our patrons to submit games to a much smaller pool. That's exactly what we've done here. But yeah, it is bittersweet because it is the finale of that epic pool party. Mm-hmm. This game was submitted by our patron and friend Grim. And before we get into the episode proper, a couple days back, Nintendo released information and video and blog and whatever else they did about a new Nintendo Switch called Nintendo Switch Lite.
Oh, yeah. I had forgotten about this news. It was leaked a couple weeks
ago.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Leaked a couple weeks ago. Nintendo had an official release a week and a half ago, whatever. Kenny, have you heard anything about it yet?
I mean, I've caught the headline, but I didn't read details just because I didn't care.
We all have Nintendo Switches?
We do. Isn't that weird?
Slash, that's Kenny, your wife owns
right, my wife has a Switch.
Okay.
That so Kenny steals.
This Nintendo Switch Lite is a slightly smaller screen. It's obviously lighter in weight, but it has the same 720p resolution, better battery life, and a $199, which is frustrating to me. It's $200. Quit lying. Price point. and it comes out in three different colors, like this kind of light yellow and this pretty turquoise and then this weird ugly gray. So
yeah. Here's the thing. The colors are bad. I used to be upset about them doing this, but whatever, get your money, make your bucks. I don't care. I'm not going to buy it. I've got a normal Switch and it just came out in my mind. And I just got one, but get better colors. Like they seem kind of ugly to me. That gray one's whack.
The gray one is whack. The other two I'm kind of fine with. You're not going to also get a light on top of your
no,
Switch?
Because you can't remove the Joy-Con, so it's only portable. It's like a Game Boy, essentially. It's like a DS.
Can you not remove the GameCon?
You can't remove the Joy-Cons, and it's not dockable. You cannot put it in a dock and play it on TV.
I think that they haven't fully... I think that's what people are thinking about the docking situation, but I'm not sure if... I don't know. I've seen conflicting reports on that.
Then why make another console? If you can't remove the Joy-Cons, though, what do? Set the dock in your lap?
True. Exactly. I know that... Yes, you set the dock in
like
your lap.
Like, it's one or the other.
It's practical.
I know that it doesn't have rumble feature, but it still has the movement stuff. That's gyro stuff inside. So, I don't know. I don't know. We're still waiting for more information to see fully. Kenny, you could get a Switch Lite and you would actually be able to play since your wife doesn't, you have to get permission from
her.
She
never shares. Yeah. She's stingy.
Well, if you want to get yourself a Switch, get yourself a Switch Lite. Don't just get one, get all three in each color and then you know exactly what will happen. Don't you guys?
No, what?
They'll see you rolling, they hating, patrolling, they trying to catch you riding dirty.
Wait, I still don't know what you're talking about.
If you didn't get that far in the game this week, you suck. Just like in our retro game of the week, Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty.
Overview.
In case you missed that because it was incredibly subtle or incredibly forced... Raiden
so blatant
is the I mean I guess it was blatant is the code name of the protagonist in this week's game of the week
dude protagonist
G- protagonist.
Dudo?
Dudo.
No. I mean, there's... I mean, yes, protagonist, but also there's a second protagonist also for at least the first part.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't, like, that's, it's a prequel. It doesn't even really count. It's skippable.
Not, like, that whole thing, is it?
No, okay, not in our version of the game. In the Japanese ship of the game, if the player says they've played previous Metal Gear games, like, really? On an opening, it just skips the prequel altogether and just takes you straight into the original gameplay. It's 100% what? Supposed to be there to, like, give some context and let you sort of feel out the controls and get into the story if you haven't played Metal Gear stuff before.
That makes sense because I know I'm jumping the shark ship right now, but like that, it felt weird. Like there's two tutorial sections. Like, you know, you had it at the beginning in the prologue and you had it when you got control of Raiden, which is spelled Raiden. But Raiden, yes, yeah. Anyways, I know I've interrupted you, but Raiden is one of the dudotagonists.
Regardless, your protagonist, primary protagonist in Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty. So this title is a PlayStation 2 title. In fact, arguably the PlayStation 2 title. It came out in 2001.
Dang. It's one of the launch, like, window titles.
Absolutely. And this was, like, the title that they pushed to at try E3. And sell the console. You know how there's, like, sort of the keystone launches with everything? This was arguably that game.
It was that game, but do you know what the other games were? This is not all of them, but I just saw, like, a graphical promotion of that, like, that holiday season, and they said, yes, Metal Gear Solid 2, along with Devil May Cry, Grand Theft Auto 3, and Final Fantasy 10.
What?
Who's, I mean, they seriously really wanted to sell PlayStation 2.
Who is not going to get a PlayStation 2?
I mean, they sold like crazy. I remember.
It's still my favorite console of all time. Kenny, I know you hate me. I've been interrupting you so much. I'm
over you.
I can pepper in information about this game throughout your excited commentary.
Yeah, it'll, like, work just fine. You get one thing and then I'll take it somewhere, and then you get another thing and then I'll take
absolutely
it somewhere.
It's perfect. It's just it's rapport we have from doing this 192 plus times.
I think it's report.
It's it's pronounced. Sorry,
this is
really
ridiculous.
So this is a Konami release, developed, published by Konami, directed, produced everything by Hideo Kojima.
Pause.
Who
big
we know
deal.
From, oh yeah, from a million things, but from previous Metal Gear games. Like, he's, yeah.
No longer part of Konami.
Nolan, quit interrupting Kenny, please.
Yeah, it's really rude. And shows a complete lack of professionalism and inexperience.
All right, keep going, Hideo.
I hate you.
So this is actually the fourth Metal Gear game that he's been at the helm of. And if you haven't played any of these titles, they're sort of stealth-based action-adventure, military-themed, where you are, a doubly elite operative, a triple. How do you even explain
Dudo? You don't.
Yeah, no, but like,
but like, you're a secret. You're secret, right? You're not with. It's like Mission Impossible. That's exactly.
But like, times kind of fantasy. I always think of this as like the fantasy military genre, but like a superhero kind of.
Yes, element. I agree.
Because it's fantastic. Your enemies have supernatural abilities and aren't like really human. Like the. The tech and the AI is all over the top and sort of looking at what may be possible in the future when they're developing it and then multiplying it times like ridiculousness. And so it's this over the top military action adventure stealth fantasy. And you're piloting not the, you keep bringing up this duotagonist thing. You're piloting a new character who's sort of being introduced to this Metal Gear world. And we think that means that, that Snake isn't going to be around. But then you quickly realize, at least if you've played any of the other games, that, he's hanging out with you on these adventures as well.
Spoiler! No, his Iroquois something or other.
No, that listen, it happens like 10 minutes into the game, and it literally still uses the character's actual real name that's the same.
And his voice actor and
everything. Right, and the voice actor, which is super iconic, and the look. And like, it's obvious to the player, at least if they've ever played these games, who it is. And so it's in the story, it's veiled, but it's obvious.
And also on that point of like spoilers and story, I'm sure you've got some story there, Kenny, but these games are so interesting to me and always have been, because I've never been into this series, unfortunately, because I think I'd really like it. But it's the story is really convoluted and honestly reminds me of how strange Kingdom Hearts story is. Like from outside looking in, you're just like, what?
That's an interesting comparison, and I could totally see that. I have not been deep into either of those series. However, I've watched some story videos on both of them and read up. This week, I watched a video, like an hour plus long video of like the complete timeline and story of Metal Gear Solid.
No, yeah. You should have sent that to me. I needed that.
I'm all about story, but it doesn't matter. You can watch it and still be just as confused because there are so many characters. Yeah. Those characters change
and
they have the
same name and faces sometimes.
They all have the same name. And there's true. Like three clones of the same guy.
Right. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. State. And they don't mind doing ridiculous things because that's sort of who the series is. It almost feels like a TV series that's serialized and written by different people. And you can tell because like there's these little sort of pieces of story that sort of each make sense. And then one will finish and then they'll be like, just kidding. None of that was true. Here's the new real truth. And then like 14 of those swaps later, you get this crazy story of, you know, like the president being in trouble isn't actually important at all and isn't the biggest
thing.
I'm all talking about things that happen really early in the game.
No. Okay. Yeah, so Kenny, can you just set up a bare bones, what is the story of Metal Gear Solid 2?
Good luck.
So Metal Gear Solid 2, you drop in, you get this backstory a little bit of sort of prequel prologue that I'll skip over. It just introduces, sort of the backstory a little bit so that you have some characters to reference. And then you get jumped into the main story, which is there's this giant, I guess it's not an oil rig. It's like an oil cleanup facility.
Tanker.
Yeah. From the tanker that was taken out in the prologue, there's this giant facility out there to help, I guess, clean all of this stuff up. But then it becomes a really important sort of socio-political economic place, and a lot of stuff's going on. It's got environmental impact and the president's out there and the military's involved in keeping it safe, and you don't really know why at first, but your character Raiden is shipped out here along with a SEAL team, although the SEAL team doesn't know he's there, and your job is to rescue the president, keep him safe. You think it's going to be simple, and then things start blowing up all around you and gets a little crazier from there.
Gameplay.
Kenny mentioned that this is a stealth game, and I would argue that it's like the template of a stealth game. If you've never played this series or a series like it, and honestly, I haven't, like I didn't play Tom Clancy games and some of the other stealth thief games. So this kind of feels like a foreign genre to me because what you're doing is staying hidden. You do not want to go into like open combat because you'll get discovered, and you might recognize the like famous alert noise from this series, and you might not even know it's from the series, but like they use it in Smash Brothers. And do we use it on the podcast in one of our little things?
That's what I was going to ask. We do or did.
I think we used to. We don't even know.
But not anymore.
Well,
Kenny would know.
I would.
Yeah. So you aren't wanting to be discovered. So you're using your tools and you're staying hidden in the shadows away from guards that have like certain paths that they're walking. And so you're looking over corners and stuff. So the name of this game is 100% stay hidden. And I kind of like that.
And I like the idea as well. Kenny's really good at it. He put out a first play.
I'm terrible at this game.
It was a good first play.
What if Kenny's character was the solid snake? Like, what if you're walking around a tanker and you see a guy get up, kneel down, lay down, kneel down, kneel, lay, kneel, lay.
You're just
kneel,
staring
lay,
at like, him do that for a while.
Kenny... right.
The problem with first plays is you're still getting to know buttons.
Yeah.
And like, and sometimes remapped buttons depending on like what you played last. And so figuring out how to do the things you're supposed to do was not easy. And then sometimes I'm also just kind of bad at games. And you multiply those times each other, and it was an embarrassing first effort.
Well, and you need skill in this game because it's like it's not easy. There's different tactics, I guess, to play this game. Like, you can take out all of the guards and enemies, but if you're playing the way I think that the creators intended for you to play, there's not tons of battle here outside of, you know, boss encounters, because you are hiding in lockers, you're sneaking around, you're crawling through vents. When you're riding, you're cartwheeling past, you know, enemies. You can lock yourself up against a wall and then slowly walk behind someone. You've got a mini map, which is key to the Metal Gear games.
Did y'all have that when you selected the radar? Did you have it always on?
I had it always on except for like when the warning signal.
Yeah, when it alerts, it turns off is what I did. Just because I thought that was the way they like meant it to be played. And so
That
was tough though.
Yeah, but in that mini game, in the mini map, it's got a kind of a cone of vision for each of your enemies or cameras or whatever else so that you can see where they can see. So as long as you're quiet and walking around those cones of vision, then you are going to be, you know, for all intents and purposes, stealthy.
Right.
Yeah. You say that, but they do a good job of adding complexity here. It's not just if you walk into their cone of vision. It's also if you make too much noise. It's also if you leave out a dead body or something way out of place that one of the guards is going to recognize. They do as a fairly admirable job of making it feel like the things that would normally get you caught, get you caught.
And something that I really appreciated about this game as well. And by the way, I don't know if we mentioned, we've played the first one on this podcast before, and I'm having trouble and didn't go back and listen because I'm stupid, remembering where I landed personally on the first one.
We played it relatively early in the podcast, and I believe that we all gave it our vote for New Game Plus status, but we all had, I think we all had reservations and issues just because the time that it came out, it's hard to do, and then you've the control of the character and all of those things, which I think carry over to here. But a lot of what Metal Gear Solid, you know, one was, they got a lot of improvements in this one. Like, I think this is the first time you get first person shooting. This is the first time you get dodge rolling. This is the first time you get like hanging from
ledges to like scoot around and avoid an enemy, which was fun. Yeah. And the fact that that was limited by, you know, grip strength and some of those kind of things, they put some really neat details into each of their implementations and lots of time-based stuff. Because it's really easy in a game like this to just take it really, really slow.
True.
Which I'm all about.
Right. And you need to some degree, because you're trying to be safe and methodical and, you know, take somebody out, go hide the body, the whole thing. But that can then feel really passive and not like engaging. And so they mix in a good amount of like, sure, you can hang here, but for only so long. Or like, sure, you can throw this frag grenade that like protects you from being seen by that, you know, by that little flying sensor, but only for so long. And, you know, or hey, bomb's about to go off. You have to accomplish these objectives, but relatively quickly. And it gives a good balance to the fact that there's still like energy, even though it's something that you can choose to play really sort of passively. Sure. And I thought that was super wise from a design point of view.
Well, and what I was saying is that, like, thinking back to playing the first one, when you said that, Dustin, I remember now that the controls being really wonky was a problem for me. Definitely improved a lot of that in this game. Like, I didn't really have any complaints on that front. But another just kind of aspect of this series, I guess, in general, and what was highlighted in this game, was how much of a, like, not spy, but just, like, military person I felt like, because of how many tools they give you to use like in your tool belt. And at first I was a little overwhelmed with how many there were, and like I didn't know which ones did what, but I ended up really enjoying cycling through the menus and finding like the mines and some of the sensors and being like, oh cool, that's how I use that in this room. So I don't know. I really enjoy the utility belt aspect of the gameplay.
Yeah, and most of those are pretty realistic and not like broken. Like when they give you sensors for a bomb, you still had to go look at it because it sort of gave you an area that it was in, you know, and later you got like some beeps instead of a visual. And so they, even when they gave you tools, they still made you feel like you were having to discover something or find something or solve a puzzle. And that was really welcome. I say that for the most part. There's one or two things that they gave you that I felt like were the stupidest things in the whole world.
What?
And I will never be able to take seriously the cardboard box.
Oh,
as a
no.
Hiding
it's
place.
My
iconic.
Favorite. Though.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
The it's my worst thing.
It's
That's
my
the best.
Favorite.
It's so funny.
He doesn't carry it around. You don't see him carrying around a cardboard
no,
box. But if you've got
it
equipped, then he, I mean, you've seen the memes before, I'm sure, or the videos, but because it's in more recent Metal Gear Solid games as well. But your character, I guess Raiden doesn't have it, does he? Or at least not
I don't
to
think
where
so.
I was in the game.
No.
But your other dude antagonist has it, and where you drop down and you've got that, yeah, a cardboard box over you, and you can slowly move as a cardboard
it's
box.
It's so good, Kenny. It's iconic. Like, I remember first seeing that not in the game, but in Smash Brothers, because Snake is in, they put him in Brawl. And he's in the most recent Smash, and his taunt, like every character has a taunt, and his is going into his box. All three of them are. Like, they normally have
funny.
Different ones, and all of his are going into a cardboard box.
That is wonderful. So I like that decision. One of the decisions that I know hardcore fans of the series were split on, divided on, and the majority of them, from what I can gather, did not like this, was that when you get Metal Gear Solid 2 for Christmas 2001 and you stick it in ready to play a full game as the beloved Solid Snake, and you either instantly in Japan or over here maybe very quickly realize that your main character is not Snake anymore, but it's Raiden. A lot of people did not like that change, and did not, and I think conversely did not, or not conversely, but like I think in line with that, didn't like the character then of Raiden.
I can totally empathize with that, but here's my thoughts on that. I really like that. First of all, Hideo Kojima does not care about that or you. He really did make a game and a series that he loved and wanted to make. And so I kind of really, really like the idea of having a different character for every game. I know that some, you know, Snake comes back for some of the other ones and you play as, I don't know if Raiden does for other ones, but I ended up liking Raiden. And I didn't have a like major connection to Snake, so maybe this is a little biased and or just ill-informed opinion, but I like that he takes a storytelling and a game creation approach that's like, nah, we're going to do this, and it ends up working. I don't
yeah,
know.
And I appreciate that too, and I fall in the same camp as you. I like Raiden as well, but neither you nor I are in the timeline of playing Metal Gear Solid games, Metal Gear games, liking the main character, like, you know, so like we're coming into it at a different time in which, okay, we're okay with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see how fans at the time would be like, you know, whoa, what's
it's a ripoff. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He's certainly not nearly as cool. Wow. That was a difficult sentence.
He's
certainly not nearly as iconic.
Not like, yet.
He's not as capable. Oh, sure. And all those things grow and whatever else. But at least at the beginning of this story, I can see how you can sort of feel a little bit ripped off. Mm-hmm. What I like, and I don't know how much truth there is to this, but as you're reading about this game, the word is that the reason they even gave it to another character that got to interact with Snake instead of, you know, being another incarnation of his story is just the fact that Hideo Kojima thought, we have to do a tutorial for our new players. Like, there's no getting around it. You have to teach them how to play the game. And it feels really, really wrong to have people who've played this awesome, super capable guy for a number of other games already and know what he does super well, have to relearn the mechanics. Like, that makes no sense. So let's just completely make it about another person so that that element of the game makes sense. And true or not, if you care about your games enough to think about those like tiny little user experiences and their authenticity, you've got the perspective that's gonna make good games, because like that's caring. No one cares if you're forced to tutorial, but I don't know. I just thought that was really cool.
And it kind of does service to the fans because you still get to play Snake a little bit, but maybe that would just make them angrier.
One of the things that is carried over from previous Metal Gear games is that there are incredibly lengthy dialogue sequences between Snake and his team. There's cut scenes, sometimes seriously and literally 15 plus minutes at a time. You can even see in Kenny's first play, he's just trying to skip through everything, and even skipping through everything takes a while.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But if you, like me, like story and want to watch it all, then you are for a long time in this game and in this series sitting and watching. For some people, you might be okay with that. I'm typically okay with that, except in this game, I would feel like I was sneaking past a guard or two and then be in another 5-minute cutscene time and time again.
I don't know the actual breakdown, but I think if you timed an entire playthrough of like a standard playthrough, not someone speedrunning or not someone like super taking a long time like I would, and then timed how much of that was cutscenes, I think for sure over half of the time you would be doing story-based things. At least if you include the like interactive interruptions that are sort of part of the gameplay, but are, you know, communicator stuff. Maybe even 60, 65, 70% of this game is story content that's passive or sort of secondarily passive, where you're learning things that matter but not having any, you know, direct control over it.
And that's another thing I think that goes back to not being familiar with the series. I think that's unfortunate because you'd be way more into those pauses of dialogue. I think I was okay with them. I kind of like the whole like storytelling experience being half gameplay, half listening and watching. I'm down with that. So if I loved this story and was invested, man, I really do think I'd be a huge fan of this series, and I'm tempted to like go through them. But like, they were quality, I thought. Like, the dialogue's really silly at times, but so much of the game is far-fetched. But I don't know, I kind of liked the interruptions, which,
and that's what I'm trying to get a grasp on. Are they intentionally being absolutely absurd? They are,
yes,
right?
I can't say it on the podcast.
the dialogue, the characterization,
yeah, I think they are.
They are. They have to be because of some of the things that happen and some of the things that they say. It's completely silly.
And Kojima's a troll IRL. Like, yeah, when the whole Konami thing happened, he was a troll on Twitter, and it was awesome to watch.
Well, I believe that. And you get a lot of this here, but it does. But and a lot of it, like a lot of it. And it's at times it really is. You only do one or two things and then you're stuck in another one. So you just need to know that going in that you will be watching a lot in this game.
Yeah.
Aged. I think as we talk about how this game has aged, we'll want to hit on all the big ones. Graphics, audio, because there's some noteworthy things there. But I want to start the conversation by talking about sort of its legacy, because this not only was an important sort of, you know, console-defining kind of release that sold a whole lot of games and expanded an already popular series to, I don't know, maybe even being more popular, if that's possible. But it also just gets a ton of recognition for the type of storytelling it does. Like, this game has always been considered well ahead of its time, and the topics of the game and the things that it talks about in terms of, I don't know, just like themes that it tries to tackle, even if it does it in really ridiculous ways with over-the-top villains, are all really big and serious, and but then set in a fun, completely fictional environment. And I don't know, I'm curious what you guys think of this game in terms of its like impact and legacy and that kind of thing.
I think it's massive. What's always been crazy and fascinating to me about this series is that, yes, it's highly praised, but I don't think it has a very easy entry point. It's such a different style of game. And I think even around 2000, 2001, it was different. So I've always been kind of interested in super fans of this series because they just have a different take on games, I guess. But it's undeniable that the second entry has some sort of impact. And because people do like this one specifically, people were let down. But I was reading that like now Metal Gear Solid 2 is one of the like really, really solid ones.
Oh, yeah. No, it's considered one of the greatest games of all time. And a lot of people like it, at least those that write about it, talk about how it had such an impact on like some of its themes and what its message, you know, things like that. And I get that, but that's not why I play or enjoy games. Like they even get into talking about how like, oh, this really speaks towards postmodernism years before it ever. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I guess that's important and games can be art. I'm all about all of that. And they can be, you know, like social commentaries, whatever. But that's not why I'm playing a video game. And that's not why I enjoy video games. So I just think that is a part of the conversation because, Kenny, you're asking about its legacy and the impact that it had. And that's always rolled up in that conversation when talking about this game.
There was something that really impressed me when I was looking up stuff about this game and trying to determine like over the years where it's landed in people's minds. And one of the really cool things, and this is a testament to the graphical revolution, I think around the 2001-2000 era, is that the shadows in this game are actually really impressive for the PS2 and have an impact on stealth and how you're hidden. Whereas in the first game, that wasn't a possibility with the graphics. You had to just be behind physical barriers or walls. But in this game, the shadows and the way they lay, you can even see them in the cutscenes. It's actually really impressive. That actually affected gameplay.
Yeah. If you didn't talk about the mechanical aspect there, I was thinking you were doing another like Kenny Cloud moment where it's somewhat unrelated. But since it does have a mechanic purpose, I completely see that there. Yeah, I guess I didn't notice the shadows, but I definitely noticed the graphics. I mean, if there's one thing that changed between 98's Metal Gear Solid and 2001's Metal Gear Solid 2, it's graphically. Like you actually have characterization to Snake's face now, which you know in the prologue, you can see fully in great definition his mullet, and you can see like all of the different sceneries that you are in, whether it's the tanker or the boat, or is the boat the tanker?
The tanker. If you're in Big Shell, you see
all of the different areas, although you're really only in like one area, the plant. Each of the different rooms and like outer portions, like they all have detail, and the areas are created really well so that you can sneak and be stealthy. It is going to take some practice, but I think graphically in regards to all of that, they've done really well and really exceeded a lot. They did great bringing the PlayStation 2, you know, and utilizing its components and its abilities. But one of the things that does bother me in these games and games like this is the fixed camera. And I don't think you have to have fixed camera. In recent, more modern Metal Gear games, I'm assuming you don't. But in this game, you do. And I don't know if you had to do that at the beginning of PlayStation 2 era. We're in a new era here.
I think it's just a stylistic choice. I like the fixed camera. It reminds me of Resident Evil.
Yeah, for sure. And I know they're trying to give us like artistic, like with each camera angle and shot, they're trying to do something there. But I just don't like, I don't have the freedom that I feel like you in modern games.
It works well too for them, like telling you what things you can hide behind and kind of giving some of the sort of puzzly elements of the stealth a little bit more control for them. If you break that out completely, I think it's a little easier to either have that be unclear or be real exploitable. And so, I don't know. It works here for me. It didn't bother me personally.
And I thought actually some of the sequences of the fixed camera ended up being maybe better than not, than having a free camera, like the Harrier section where you're shooting down the Harrier. I loved all the different angles, like where you go below and they're shooting missiles and you got to hide behind the wall. I thought it worked for me. Also, you might be onto something, Dustin, where it's like they also did that for processing power. Maybe it's like better to do it that way instead of having a free camera. I don't know.
To some degree, it also makes the transition into cutscenes a little easier because, you know, it feels like you're looking at specific shots. And so if you're going from full on free roam where the camera and everything moves, it just feels different. And so you're going from like fixed camera where you have control of what's going on to fixed camera where you're watching these cutscenes and dialogue. And so I think, I don't know if that was the reasoning behind it, but I think it does make the connection between those two separate things a little less jarring.
Another aging consideration is handling. Hmm. Kenny, you struggled in your first play. Did you feel more in control by the end of the week, or are you still frustrated with some of the controls there?
No, absolutely. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good. My issues were more like literally not yet having a sense of finger to button in terms of what it was going to do. And that piece just takes
time.
It was
just like a new game shock kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And some of that is games are developed, again, around like specific controllers with that feeling naturally in mind. And when we're playing these in the future and, you know, remapping some buttons and things to make it accessible on our hardware, it can change that vibe a little bit. And so it took me probably a little longer than it would have normally to get everything under my thumbs. But once I did and knew how to navigate the menus and learned even the like elements of things, learned how to look around corners and how to go first person to, you know, to take camera pictures and to shoot your gun and those things that like I just was absolutely terrible about initially fumbling my way through. Once you get them, I feel like they're done well.
I felt better by the end of the week. And I imagine that this is one of the games where you play for a long amount of time. By the end of the game, you're pretty smooth, you know, and near flawless with your movements and with what your control is. But I felt some of the age there and that like it's still somewhat rigid, and to switch between items and weapons isn't the smoothest. And
it takes a little time, like crouching and getting back up and turning around. And so,
yeah.
So you're at least vindicating my terrible performance a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Especially for someone that's freshly coming into it. Like, it's somewhat foreign. I think it's completely in line with other espionage, like those kinds of games. But there aren't tons of those. And then we don't have tons of history with those kinds of games.
So the music in this game, and I think throughout the whole series, is interesting to me because it's not really on theme fully. How do I describe this? It's kind of more like spy soundtrack, like a classic spy movie in my mind, and more orchestral in some, that's not a word, orchestraic.
Orchestral?
Orchestral. Follow.
Okay. I'm learning. In some places where you wouldn't expect it to be. And I know that's a weird way to explain it, but I really love the music in this game. And I think that it's executed well too. Like even when it's lower, when you're trying to be stealthy, I think it's appropriately low at those times. And then during fights, obviously it's really epic. So big fan.
Yeah. Can I be honest? Sure. Like I noticed some of the music during some of the cut scenes and maybe during some of the fights, the boss battles, but I really didn't like notice music other times. Like in my mind right now, I feel like I was just kind of sneaking around and only hearing ambient noises of, you know, wherever I was or the guards coming by. Like, I feel like I don't even recall music playing.
I'll excuse you for that because in those cutscenes, you're watching what a guy keep tally of killing people on his chest by cutting himself. You're watching a plane transform into a transformer in the water.
There's a vampire.
That guy. Like, of course, you're going to be focused on the ridiculousness of other things than the music. Yeah.
I think part of the reason that you also don't focus on it, not just the gameplay and it's distracting because you do, but like you get musical influences from different places depending on who's done what. And the guy they got to do the music for this comes from like the film world. And so you've got someone who's used to setting theme and atmosphere, but without doing it kind of over sort of, you know, too heavy-handedly, kind of overtly. And so they, what was the guy's name? They had Harry Gregson Williams, who worked with Hans Zimmer, which is the name you guys will actually know, his studio. Yeah, yeah. They had him do the music for this game, and I thought it was really well done. I thought it sort of segued and set theme, and there were a couple places it was obvious and broke, but when there's like a character that something really overt is going on. And so I don't know. I thought it was really nice.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. And I'll start, I guess, and just say for a game that is touted as one of the greatest video games of all time, it isn't without its issues. I think that there's going to be divided allegiance and just thought towards this game. Like, if you like the cheesy, silly dialogue that's not really good but is completely intentional, then you'll enjoy some of those cutscenes that are often. If you just want to get to gameplay, which I know some of those, we have some of those that listen to us in our Discord and kind of make that clear that cutscenes are not the, you know, they're not a fan of cutscenes. Well, cutscenes are going to definitely get in the way of your gameplay in this game. A lot of people like the cultural themes and messages in this game, but I don't really care. I just want a good story and decent gameplay. I do think you get that enough here. I think it is an improvement over Metal Gear Solid. I still think there's some way to go in handling. I never felt in complete control of my character, and that's very important when you're trying to be stealthy. But I do think that it's definitely a quality game. The story is so layered that it is intriguing to me, and I do give Metal Gear Solid 2 my vote for New Game Plus status.
Yeah, I'll jump in and say that I had some really similar experiences. This one is a huge game that is recognized as being great. And once I learned how to not be terrible at it, which took me a little time, certainly think that it's New Game Plus status worthy. I'll just sort of say that up front. But I agree that there's some things that aren't perfect. However, I think that Metal Gear Solid in general is a franchise that I could get into a lot more. The over-the-top villains are just so fun to me, and they're ridiculous. It's so many of the like military kind of things take themselves way too seriously, and the sort of fantasy version of military here is really fun for me. And so I'm not going to argue with a huge title that's been highly successful being worth people playing. Yeah, it's got a lot of cutscenes. It's not perfect. I think it was probably a better game when it came out than it is as a game played retrospectively. But nevertheless, it's an excellent game. And I, say New Game Plus for me, for sure.
That's two yes, Nolan.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I do give it New Game Plus, though, and I agree with everything that's been said. But something it made me realize this week was how impressive the PS2 is. Like, I already knew that. Has amazing titles.
So
but the fact that this was a launch title and is better than a lot of, like, late era PS2 games is pretty cool. But I also feel like I don't get a say in it because of how elitist I think some of the fan base is for this series. But I don't care what they think. It's a great game. You should play it, and you should play the first one too.
Which means Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty is New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had a couple of people write in this week. Garlisle said, maybe it's that I play the third game before this one. Maybe it's that I just don't mesh well with this kind of stealth action puzzle-ish whatever hybrid. Maybe I just have bad opinions. Maybe this comment I'm writing is all just a part of the Patriot conspiracy. But in the past, I put this game down about halfway through and never picked it up again, and felt much the same general apathy this time too. Something about the gameplay stubbornly will not click for me, and while I love how absurd its legendarily wild story gets, it lacks the personal emotional investment that would push me to persevere. I've ultimately enjoyed watching this game be played more than I've enjoyed playing it myself.
Now, that last statement I could 100% like understand someone resonating with, because so much of it is story and cutscenes anyways, and because some of the frustrations are in like gameplay execution and how frustrating just stealth games can be. Like you get caught and a bunch of guys swarm you and and kill you, and pretty effectively in this game. We didn't talk about how good the AI is. It's not like it was pretty well developed AI.
Sure.
And so like I could totally see someone saying I'd rather watch it than play it, but it probably just means he didn't use the box enough.
Guy in the corner said, for years, I've heard about the series carving its path through gaming. It seems like everybody I know has played a Metal Gear game, except for me. I decided to change that this week when I heard this was the next game. I sat down and beat the whole game, albeit on very easy. I don't even know where to start with this, but the one thing that I think shined brighter than anything was the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I ever think about in most games because you have a first-person view, but this game blew it out of the water, no pun intended, and really made me think twice about camera work in games. Every single shot here stood out to me. This game absolutely gets my vote for New Game Plus with its absurd story. You can't talk about MGS without mentioning it at least once. Captivating gameplay, and for making me think of something that I took for granted in games for many years.
Guy in the corner, I can super relate to that feeling of not knowing about or not having played the series, but everyone else saying how good it is. That happened to me all during like middle school and high school. And so I regret not jumping in earlier because it really is a fun game.
I will say that I think you heard me. I said I give it my vote for New Game Plus status. I can relate to what Garlisle said about wanting to watch. Like, I'm intrigued by the story. I'm intrigued by the gameplay, but I don't think I'll ever have mastery of it. And so this would be a game that I would like to, watch the story, watch the movie, you know, mm-hmm. cutscenes type stuff. I'd like to watch it, but for me, it's not a game that I'm ever going to, like, I don't want to get into the series. Like, I think I'll like the newer games because it you have more control. I think it's changed from complete stealth to some other things. I'm not entirely sure, but regardless.
I will say shout out for getting the whole game beat, even though we gave you an extra week because of retro recap schedule this go round. It's a long game, and so, like, props on falling in and getting all the way through it.
But for now, we're going to put aside Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty, and we're going to randomly select the next retro game of the week from our master list. We're out of the season of Patreon pools. We're back to this massive list. And from there, we're going to find out what game we're going to be playing for the next
seven days.
We will be playing a game developed and published by Activision.
Okay.
In March of 1984.
Whoa.
Came out originally for the Atari 2600 and then was ported to the Apple II, different Atari systems, Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, etc. It is a game called Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation, or Hero.
Okay. What? That's a long time ago.
Yeah, these like early mid-80s, like just post, you know, like gaming industry collapse games are sometimes really interesting.
I don't know.
Because depending, there can be gems, but there can be some really terrible ones too. And I have no context where this is.
Yeah, so what are we playing it on? Atari or?
Atari 2600. Okay. Yeah, that's the original. So that's what we'll play it on. And 1984. Yeah, old. Depending on how old you think Nolan and I are, it will be possibly before we were born, but long after Kenny was an adult.
This one precedes me too, actually, but barely.
Find a copy of Hero this week. It is H.E.R.O. Which, again, Helicopter Emergency Rescue Operation for the Atari 2600, and play along with us this week.
Join us in D.I.S.Cord.
Oh, no.
We have a Discord server. We'd love for you to join us. NGPpodcast.com. Scroll down just a hair and click Join Us in Discord.
Big thanks as well to our patrons or supporters on patreon.com who help to keep this show trucking along. I want to say a big shout out to some new additions to that family. James for hopping on the bandwagon on Patreon, and also to Kathy and Shauna for upping their contributions.
Thank you.
We also want to give a big shout out to Bill for his producer level support.
Bill!
And also for a short but pleasant conversation with him this week. Yeah. Bill, thanks for dropping in. And to our other producers as well, Antonin, Maxima, Corey, Limit Break, Garlisle, Dear Baby,
wow.
Grim, Richard, Zach, and of course Zion.
That's amazing. You guys, thank you so
much. It's a growing list and it's awesome. And yes. We're just so thankful for all of your support. And yeah, appreciate you guys.
I do have to say that Bill upped his patronage many times this week. One, because he's very supportive of us and always has been, but also because he was trying to get us to be able to meet our next and final, really, at this point, goal. And he did accomplish that. We reached the goal of of recording a live episode video of a D&D session between Kenny, myself, and Nolan. And the hype was
real. Yes.
We started to look into character creation, development, and then, reasonably so, we knew this was going to happen. The summer is concluded, and so we went just under again that goal.
Dang.
So although we started dipping our toes in the Dungeons & Dragons universe to get prepared for that.
I had my player's handbook out, like I was ready.
Yep, we're not going full speed ahead, though.
They're buying me a little bit of time to think about what this means for my life and whether I can continue on with the show.
Did you start, do you know what kind of character
you're gonna play? Yes, I actually kind of rehashed a secondary character I made for fun a couple months back.
Do you want to give us race or gender or anything?
I'll give you a hint. It's not a human. So that could be so many things. Yeah. And I am maybe a magic user.
Maybe. Kenny, any hints?
No, I haven't decided yet. You know, I way overthink everything. This will be firmly in that category of things that I spend too much time on. I have some tropes that I tend to play a lot more often in these games, but they're pretty terrible and obnoxious, I think. So I'm actually going to try and stretch myself and do something a little bit different.
Well, you know, we are men of our word. As soon as we hit our previous goal, we did that 24-hour live stream, which all the VODs are up now. You can go find that on our social media, on our YouTube. You can find us on any other social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, NGP Podcast, or YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, please leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Hero. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
Trying to catch me Raiden dirty?
That's really good. And we are so close to playing Dungeons & Dragons. Go to patreon.com and support us there. And this has been another episode of New Game Plus.